feel like there's not, I mean, as this kind of shows, there's not like a whole ton to talk about, but there is some.
I mean, Chris, look at this fucking Word doc that I wrote.
That's crazy.
I had a lot of
It's all about the animation and whatnot?
Brendan thought a lot about this.
So I thought, yeah, because when I first saw this like months ago, I was like, there is a lot happening here that is like popping around my head. And then when I watched it again, I was like, I must write down like my chain of thoughts as I view this movie.
Yeah. I feel like we're just Brendan's therapist for this episode.
Oh, and
it's just gonna be like,
we're gonna start, and he's like, okay, here it is.
This is my thesis.
Hello.
Hello. So what's up with Dempsey?
What is up with Dempsey?
All those
TVs.
Yeah, I gotta get out
the
you know, water vinegar solution.
Yeah. Strip that entire surface.
It's definitely gone a few layers deep at this point.
Listen, we learn things about ourselves, and what I've, you know, you live alone, and what I've learned is that, like, you know, if I cared more about decoration, I would change that up every month, but I don't. I did it one time. I like having a sense of decor, and I have no, it's good now.
Changing it, why?
Good enough.
There are the times where you used to change it for different events.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Different holiday times.
Too much,
I remember,
effort. And like,
there was an elaborate Marissa Wampler and Lissler Christmas.
Yeah,
I remember that.
That
was the birthday, I think.
Yeah, I fucking drafted up like a design for
yes.
it. And then we drew it. Like, I was like, the pool's gonna be here, and we're gonna draw like this sort of
police sitting over my shoulder with like a protractor, like not quite right.
You got a compass big enough to put a dry erase marker in instead of a pencil.
Yeah.
I think if you'll look at my designs, you'll see that she's actually a little bit overboard.
So yep. I look up at the stars to guide me. Sure, there will be challenges that find me, but I can take them on one at a time. So I make this wish to have something more for us than this. So I make this wish to have something more for us than this.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where three chums watch a bad movie, drink a themed cocktail, and talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it. I am your host for this episode, Brendan. Forget without regret. Woo! Drishler.
I'm Chris. No! Ravel.
And I am Lee, popping that one. Telehandy.
That was a very clever reference to Mary Poppins, in case you couldn't tell. And if you like to hear a lot of references to other things that you probably like more than the thing that you're watching, you're going to love the movie that we're talking about today. That's right, the movie that we are talking about today is 2023's Wish, directed by Chris Buck and Fawn Virasuntorn, is how I believe you say her name.
Sure.
I tried to find a YouTube video of her saying it so that I could make sure I got it right, and I wrote down how to do it. So Wish, or the Ready Player One-ification of Walt Disney feature animation. And of course, if we're going to watch Wish, which as we said is mercifully only 90-some minutes long, thankfully, it helps if you have a nice little drink so that you can forget your wishes while you watch it and just sort of sit back and let it all happen to you. So the drink that we made for Wish is called, I forget what Chris's suggestion was. Because I just wrote Stars Baby Yoda, now that I forgot to change it. It was something about like Ad Astra.
It was like Grogu Ad Astra.
Yeah, okay.
To the stars.
Right. Grogu Ad Astra, which is 2 ounces of bourbon, 2 ounces of ginger beer, 4 peach slices, and a lemon slice that's thinly cut, and some mint. You muddle the lemon and the peach slices in a cocktail shaker with bourbon and mint, add ice and shake until chilled, pour into a glass over more ice, and top with ginger beer. And then you add a little bit of lemon to garnish. It was going to be a lemon star, but I realized that stars are a very hard shape to make out of a lemon, because, you know, you can't really divide things up very evenly, and if you start cutting into it, it risks falling apart, so fuck that. It's just a lemon now instead. Stars are lemons now. What did you guys think of Grogu Ad Astra?
I really liked it. It's very summery.
It was very summery.
Peach and ginger.
I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed the drink. I couldn't drink all of it. I think I just don't drink as much of this type of drink.
Mm.
If it was less, I would have finished it. Also, I didn't have food, and so I wouldn't drink coffee. I don't like to drink iced coffee without food as well. Like, I just prefer to have something to snack on to let the drink go down. Especially because, like, both alcohol and coffee have negative impacts on your body.
That's very
true.
That
are alleviated by having food with them.
That's also true, yes.
So I just generally like to have something to snack on. I had some, like, chip dregs. Dissatisfied with how few chips
the remnants of chip dust.
Yeah. And that was not quite enough, but it did get me through about half the drink.
That's good. Yeah, and we also used, what was it? It was like a light ginger beer or something like that, which yes. I was worried it would be like aspartame-y, but thankfully it wasn't. Was it just less sugar, do you know?
I don't know, but I use their light tonic water all the time.
And it's not and bad?
I just prefer it.
I don't mind less sugar. I mind it more when it's like a fake sugary thing.
Yeah,
and it
I
just
don't
tastes
think that it's
like
without
fake
calories.
Sugar. Okay. No, I didn't think it was. I assumed it was probably just like a less sugary version of the thing, which was good. I didn't notice any weird aftertaste about it, so like I was happy with that.
I said when I sipped this that I felt like it might be the best one we've done so far this year.
It is. Yeah.
I think it is.
I'm inclined, I think, to agree with you thus far.
It came together, everything that came together really nicely. I don't really have any criticisms.
Yeah, this if it were slightly more of a summery day, this would be very fitting. It's not a bad day, I have to say. This
it's just a wet, day, kind of overcast day.
Yeah, we've had better, and hopefully we'll continue to have better. Knock on wood.
But not hot.
Not hot. Don't go above 70.
Right, 70 is fine. Let's keep it there, people. Having discussed the cocktail that we made, I think we next have to go into the story of Wish. Lee, I wish that you would tell me what this movie was about.
Well, we don't have to get what we wish for, do we?
No. Here, do you want to take my glowing wish out of my chest
and
hold it in a little bubble? Yes, and then eat it.
A heart attack.
Yes.
And then your eyes are going to flare.
Yeah.
Like,
oh. Yeah, and then I'll be like a little sad, but kind of get over it, except I won't.
Yeah, like hungover.
Also, I'll be sleepy, but I won't. Anyways.
Yeah. All right. Here's the plot of Wish. Many years ago, King Magnifico and his wife, Queen...
Amaya. I think it's Amaya.
And I just, the way that I read that, there's like a dash, like his wife, Queen Amaya.
His wife, Queen?
It is I, wife, Queen Amaya.
The kingdom's wife, Queen.
Yeah. And his wife, Queen Amaya, established the kingdom of Rosas on an island in the Mediterranean Sea. Having studied sorcery, Magnifico is able to grant the greatest desires of his subjects. Each of them give up the memory of their wishes to be sealed and protected by the king until he can grant them. Once a month, at a ceremonial event, Magnifico chooses one wish to be granted. In the present, 17-year-old Asha prepares to interview for the job of Magnifico's apprentice on the day of her grandfather Sabino's 100th birthday, hoping that Magnifico will grant Sabino's wish to inspire people. The interview goes well until Asha requests for Sabino's wish to be granted, which Magnifico declines, seeing the wish's elusiveness as a potential threat to his power. Asha realizes Magnifico never intends to return the ungranted wishes to their owners, and when she questions his methods, Magnifico refuses to accept her apprenticeship or grant any of her family members' wishes. Asha tries but fails to convince Sabino and her mother, Sakina, that Magnifico is deceiving them. Distraught, she makes her own wish on a star, and to her surprise, the star descends from the sky in the form of an anthropomorphic ball of light, which Asha names Star.
Stars,
as you do.
Yeah, that's it.
Creative. Star's magic gives the forest animals, including Asha's pet goat Valentino, the ability to talk, prompting Asha to enlist Star's help in retrieving her family's wishes. Everyone in the kingdom senses Star's presence, and Magnifico feels intimidated by it. Despite Amaya's pleas, he turns to forbidden dark magic to maintain his position of power as his subjects begin to doubt his way of ruling. Asha retrieves Sabino's wish, and he is overjoyed to be able to remember it, but Magnifico arrives to arrest them, having been informed that Asha was responsible for Star's summoning. Corrupted by the dark magic, Magnifico intends to use Star's magic and Rose's wishes to increase his own power, forcing Sabino and Sakina to flee to a nearby island, while Asha, Star, and Valentino stay behind to free the citizens' wishes. One of Asha's friends, Simon, is revealed to be the one who sold Asha out to Magnifico in hopes that his wish to become a knight would be granted. Magnifico grants the wish, but additionally bewitches Simon into being his henchman in capturing Asha. Asha rallies her other friends, Dahlia, Gabo, Safi, Bazima, Hal, and Dario, to put an end to Magnifico's reign. Amaya also joins them, having discovered Magnifico's corruption. While her friends infiltrate Magnifico's study and open up the ceiling to free the wishes, Asha tries to distract Magnifico, only to be tricked by a disguised Simon whom she defeats with the animal's help. Magnifico descends the castle's tower, absorbing the power of every wish and trapping Star. Asha attempts to stop him, but is easily overpowered as Magnifico blocks out the sky and immobilizes the citizens, preventing them from wishing on Stars. Unwilling to give up, Asha encourages the citizens to make a wish about changing Rosas' future. The strength of their collective desire eventually overpowers Magnifico, whose magic turns against him by trapping him inside his staff's mirror, while the citizens regain their sealed wishes with a newfound appreciation of pursuing them. Amaya becomes the sole ruler of Rosas, helping the citizens make their wishes come true on their own. A regretful Simon is forgiven by Asha and her friends. Sark gifts Asha with a magic wand so that she can inspire people to keep dreaming before returning to the sky among the other stars.
Aww.
Aww. No one cares.
Oh, that's sweet. And that's
it's not.
That's Wish, baby. That's your wish. All right, so Wish. I don't know if you can all remember the far-flung year of 2023 about 6 or so months ago.
Sure.
Yeah. When this came out.
I didn't realize I was looking at released information.
Yeah.
Released alongside the wider release of Saltburn.
Yes, you could do a double header of Wish and Saltburn if you wanted
Wishburn?
To be perplexed and confused upon leaving the theaters.
It's either Wishburn or Saltwish.
Saltwish. I kind of like Wishburn. I think it'd be a Wishburn.
Yeah, Wishburn. It truly made me, that was not that long ago.
No, it really truly wasn't. It's weird.
Yeah.
This and you know, this kind of came and went as it could be said. I don't know how much money this made. Do you have it open there, Lee? Can you see real quick?
Box office,
yeah.
$255 million.
What was the budget?
The budget was $200, right?
Yeah, $175 to $200.
Yeah, so this did not make money. And you know, it's one of those weird things where it's this is the present. This is a quote unquote post COVID world where streaming is important now, but no one can understand how streaming matters in terms of recouping a budget.
With few exceptions, a lot of the streaming releases just feel direct-to-video or sub-theatrical a lot of
Well, no, but I mean in terms of when a movie comes out and doesn't do well, then it gets dumped on streaming.
Yes.
And it's is this profitable for you? But anyway, so that's beyond the pale here. Not something I want to really talk about, but just interesting to note. This movie, Wish, as you may have noticed, I don't know if you guys caught on to this, but there are a lot of references to other Disney movies in the movie Wish. Now, they're very subtle, and the movie does a very good job of disguising them so it doesn't interfere with the plot, they're there.
I wish
that I could say I could react to that with sarcasm as if I knew, but I was legitimately surprised when it was pointed out to me that the main character's buddies are all supposed to be the seven dwarves.
Her gang of idiots are all the seven dwarves. Yeah,
and I think I stumbled into that by being oh yeah, that one's the sleepy one.
Yeah,
and you're
they're the seven dwarves. They're the fucking seven dwarves.
Talking about, I was the guy sneezes, and I was it sucks to have your personality defined by sneezes,
right.
Referring to Sneezy the dwarf. And you were yeah, well, it's the seven dwarves. And I'm like, well, that's also...
Yeah, they are literally the seven dwarves.
Exactly.
These guys literally have the same character traits as the seven dwarves. Count them up, baby. Number one with a bullet. Doc.
Yeah.
So, yes, this movie is kind of aggressively trading in on Disney's own past and history as sort of a wallpaper for this.
Yeah.
Just as a little bit of background here. So the woman who's currently in charge of the Walt Disney Feature Animation, she's the chief creative officer. Her name is Jennifer Lee. She has a story credit on Wish. She created the story, the original story for Wish, and I think has a writing credit. Animation writing credits are weird. But anyway, she also has writing credits on things Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph and Zootopia. And
okay.
So this is a woman who has had, I'm not implying that she's some yokel who fell ass backwards into her job. But the thing that I think is kind of interesting, I guess, about the other shit that she's written is she's sort of has an interest, I think, in kind of deconstructing a little bit of what these stories mean to us. Frozen obviously has a whole lot to do with more focused on the relationship between the two sisters versus anyone's relationship with a prince or a love interest. And Wreck-It Ralph is more kind of about what is a villain and how do you live your life as this sort of villain sort of thing. So there are elements to it that I think kind of show up in here and kind of inform, I think, where the story wants to be coming from.
I would say that's maybe especially true for Wreck-It Ralph, that is maybe a little more overt in its kind of meta or slightly fourth wall breaking commentary.
Yeah, definitely.
Because within universe, they are fictional characters.
Right. Yeah, that has the added thing of they're already a layer separated, so you have that extra commentary from the real world in that movie. What I would argue, I think, first of all, is that original fairy tales are hard to write. They are hard to come up with because so many of these things, they have to be elemental and basic enough to feel like a fairy tale, but also original enough to feel like you spent your time worthwhile in watching a story like this. And that is hard to do.
And a lot of people try it.
Yes.
A lot of times it comes out derivative.
Yeah. And the thing that I kept thinking is, I kept thinking about Into the Woods when watching this, because I had read interviews with Stephen Sondheim, who did the music, and James Lapine, who did the book. And they were basically talking about how, their thought was originally, like, what if we just did an original fairy tale and made a musical around that? And they were like, oh, no, that's hard to do. It's very hard to, like, these things tend to be very simplistic stories. You have to pad them out if you want them to be, like, 90 minutes long. If you're doing a musical, they have to be even longer than that.
If you're doing an original fairy tale, you have to do two things. You have to, like, write a fairy tale. It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
The movie basically starts with that fairy tale. It starts with somebody telling that fairy tale.
Right, it starts with, like, the traditional Disney book opening.
And now you have to, like, spin it out and make it into... Because fairy tales do not a movie make.
Again, there's a reason why, like, a lot of the bad ones feel like I said, they've been padded out to, like, 90 minutes, where it's like, oh, you have animal antics and sidekicks who have to, like, focus on, too.
Yeah. Like, to make it, like, a story or a more of, like, a modern narrative, you need to, like... The characters have to move beyond, like, archetypes.
Right, yeah. I mean, especially with, like, the other, some, you know, like a Snow White or a Cinderella, where it's just sort of, the moral is, like, be nice, you know? Right, and it's just like, well, you have to be a little bit more proactive than that now.
I mean, they had, like, a purpose back then, right?
Right.
A lot of them, it was, like, teaching you to be something or do something or warn you. Don't go into the woods.
Right.
It's dangerous.
Or it's just, you marry a guy who seems like a beast, he might actually be okay. So, like, don't feel bad if your parents marry you off to a jerk. He's probably really good.
I mean, also, like, do what your parents say.
Right, right.
Really, like, stay real Christian.
Yes.
Yep.
Stay good. Don't you fuck around with those fairies, okay? Yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got, like, those are, like, kind of, like, the primal basic elements of what make fairy tales. And so I think it's kind of hard to approach that from a modern sensibility and sort of try to come up with something that feels like it's a piece with a traditional fairy tale but doesn't feel like you're just regurgitating original fairy tales.
Well, and ultimately this movie's over-reliance on making so many in-house Disney references ends up making a lot of what we see to feel kind of, like, weirdly stiff or hollow.
Right.
Because they don't exist as characters in the context of the story. They just exist as references, which is weird. Yeah. It makes the whole thing feel very strange.
I also think that Disney's kind of, like, trying to have its cake and eat it, too, because it's like, well, I want to do the origin story of, like, a big fairy tale thing. And it's like, okay, but... When you adapt your big fairy tale movies that are really popular, you're doing these... You're taking these fairy tales that have, like, generally a lot of a darker meaning,
mm-hmm.
and you're maybe doing something more with them, or at least interesting. Whereas, like, what you are wanting here is, like, the Disney-fied fairy tale, which is, like, a consumerist, like, power grab, like,
right.
money grab thing, where it's like, yeah, you wish in a star and then you get it.
Right.
Like, that's not a fairy tale. Nobody's fairy tale is that.
That also...
Who would teach their kids that?
Right, that feels like a pretty, like, shaky starting point to begin with. The idea that you're going to be, like, wishing. Wishing is the story. The story is wishing. Which I feel like, you know, if I were there, I would probably suggest that, like, maybe, like... It's also, like, the least interesting part of a movie, almost. Like, it's, like, it's like, imagine taking the I Want song of a movie and stretching it to 90 minutes.
Well, like, fairy tales about wishes definitely probably exist, at least folk tales. And maybe,
no, of course.
Especially beyond, like, Western culture as well, they'd be different. But, like, usually they would deal with the cost.
Right, I mean, that's the thing, too, is, like, you have things, like, I mean, there are definitely, like, things where it's, like, okay, Cinderella wishes to go to a ball, her fairy godmother shows up and, like, here you go, kid, go to the ball.
Yeah.
But you also have things, like... Even in Disney, like Aladdin, where it's like wishing for things is not necessarily like a net positive.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't wish for everything. And even when you wish for things, you create more problems for yourself. So it's also kind of like you're acting in this movie as though wishes are always a net good. Whereas like even in the past, you've done other movies or like The Princess and the Frog, where the whole point is like it's all well and good to like wish to have a restaurant. But like you're kind of forgetting to live your life and make connections with the people because you're just so focused on like. This is my father's dream to have a restaurant. So it's kind of like you've already even done movies where you've said, like, just wishing alone for a thing is not, like, a net positive. You also need to do other things, too.
Whereas this movie's, like, a thin concept, like wishing. Don't mind if I just make a whole movie out of that. Because I think what it mistakes here is, like, a wish, ultimately, as much as it can play into the plot of better stories, is mostly just a vehicle to make magic happen.
Right, yeah.
So, like it's not itself a plot. It's not itself a thing you can really tell a story about.
I mean, it's
about
the thing you're wishing for, unless the act. Action of the wish.
Right, exactly. The action of the wish is just a mechanical action that you need to move the story forward. It is not itself an interesting story.
Right, yeah, I 100% agree.
I think because it tied itself to this idea of, no, our story is wishes. The thing they want, wishes.
Yeah.
What do wishes represent to them?
Wishes.
I don't know. What does...
Writing the song of the summer.
Right. Oh my god, writing the song
writing
of the summer.
Writing a bop.
Serving the king.
Being a 100-year-old guy writing a summer bop.
It's just weird because...
Nice
making choices.
You see how, like...
These are modest wishes. These are dumb wishes.
I mean, that's the thing, too. It's like, you also...
Give up a wish to get $1 million.
Right, no, that's the thing. You have, like, some people who are like, I wish I could fly. And then you have, like, I wish I could make nice dresses. Like, surely we could create, like, a sliding scale of, like, how complicated these wishes are as well, too.
It's just, it's so weird that they didn't think to tell a larger story than that. That they're just like, no, wishes are the beginning and end of desire, and that's it. Like, there's nothing else to say about it. And I think what that ends up giving us is it just makes the whole, everything about this movie is very thin and very underrealized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the I Want song is a really good example, even though I agree that the message of we want something better than what we have, that is a good message. A lot of it is just being like, oh, I wish we could have our wishes back.
It's a very banal, song is a whole, like a whole thing that I want to get into, but what were you going to say?
Again, people aren't metagaming their wishes well enough. Wish for $1 million, then you can make the pretty dresses. And
that's true.
Left over.
That's true, yes. It's also just
this
like...
This is why it's an example of the bad world building, where it's like, why isn't everyone just wishing for, like, I don't know, a lot of money?
Yeah, right. There are better things you could... Also, like, it's like...
Yeah.
I want to write a song. Like, well, could you not just, like, practice? Like, is it the fact that, like,
you think
you're untalented enough? And, like,
you?
Yeah.
I think that the movie conflates, like, the idea of a wish with, like, a desire or, like, a dream.
Or, like, a goal. Yeah.
And, like, and which makes it seem, like, way more, like, bad and not, like, nefarious, because you don't know it's inherently nefarious until later, although you can guess. but it's all the more reason why it's fucked up that that people get them taken away.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they're taking away, like, a flippant, like, oh, it would be nice if I had this. It's like, this is, like, you know, wanting to, like, if somebody wanted to make dresses, like, what the fuck happened to her when that was taken away? Did she then become, like, a fucking laundress?
Right.
Or, like,
I mean, that's,
years?
Like, what happens when your wish is to fly? You lose that. Do you lose the capacity for you to imagine what flight is? And, like, if you see a bird flying in the sky, are you then, like, huh? Interesting.
Well,
and, like, do you start to, like, it just, like, what does it mean to have...
Like, Sabino, is that his name?
Yeah.
Like, did he just, like, not... Did he just stop wanting to play music?
Right, yes. Like, he learned how to play the lute or something, and then was like, I wish I could write a great song.
Yeah.
And then, like, the wish was taken away, so he was just like, well...
Well, like
that's the thing that doesn't make any sense, right? To your point, it conflates the wish with something, with I think a few other things that are more kind of, like...
Fundamental to the self.
Yes.
Yeah.
That just don't make any sense that, like... Okay, you took that wish away, so does that mean... I mean, I understand that within the very poorly explained rules of this, if your wish is taken and held by Chris Pine in his...
The dream.
In his magic... in his, like, magic...
Retractable catch, roof.
Yeah,
room, yes.
Tower, or whatever the fuck it is. You don't remember what it is, and you have no way of knowing that.
Right.
But they don't say this, but I suppose that must also mean that if Sabino ever saw a lute or someone playing an instrument... That it also cannot reoccur to you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you can't have this wish again once you've given it up. But then it's just what are you?
So that's way more magic than just removing someone's memory. That's
right. That's like you've augmented their entire being at this point.
I would even go ahead and say.
De-augmented.
What he takes from people. I mean, I get that they're calling them wishes. I would say they're more like they're taking people's, like.
Yeah.
Core,
right, core
goal,
self.
Core self,
yeah.
Core something.
Right. I mean, I do think, like, a central conceit of this movie seems to be that wishes are, like, what define you.
Right.
Which, like, okay.
Which I guess I sort
I
of
can
see
kind
what you're
of
saying,
get on that.
But in my mind, I'm like, a wish to me is something that you make in the moment because you want something really badly.
Right.
And I think that can be something that's core to yourself, but I don't think it necessarily always is.
I mean, I think that's the other thing too, is there's a difference between wishing, like, boy, like, I wish I had a nice new dress and wishing that, like, I wish my dad doesn't die or something.
Right.
You know, like, those are, like, two very different wishes.
And
there's
two.
Like a world where, like, you know, you take away the ability for the song of the summer wish or whatever. And it's like, he still maybe wants to play music, but he'll never be able to do it right until you give the wish back or something. But that, you know, it's not like he didn't
forget. That would make more sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be different, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's, like, forgetting. Like, he could still have a passing interest in music, but just assume, like, oh, I'll be back.
I'll never get anywhere with it. Yeah.
But it just seems so weird that it's, like, these people have these desires at, you know, age 18 or whatever, which is when this happens, and they just, like, forget them, and then their whole life direction is drastic.
And, like, everyone's chill with this, too, which is the weirdest thing, I think.
Unless I miss something, I feel like they do not explain enough why people have agreed that it is a good idea to give your guy these wishes.
I think it connects a little bit to that. I think it's that, like, people who are older are then reinforcing it to the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's fine. This is
right. This is something we did. So therefore,
what was
you
the
can
reason? What like
in the first
in
place.
The first
no,
place
I agree.
To do it?
I mean, so from the get go, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense because he seems he says at one point that he gave away 14 wishes last year, which is like roughly once a month. There are how many people living in this kingdom? Yeah. At a certain point, must you not think to yourself, boy, the odds are not great that he will ever get around to
it? I think it's, again, it's not explained well, but it's probably part of like a wider propaganda that like telling people that you cannot do things on your own.
Right.
Like you need your wish granted by me for to make your wishes come true.
Right, which I think it could be an interesting angle, the idea that like someone is the one saying like, I am the only one who can give you the things that you want. You cannot give them yourself. But then of course that's not really what it's about. And also
with
at the end
magic.
Yeah, right. And then of course at the end also Asha kind of has the ability to grant wishes too. So it's kind of like, but you still have someone
because
who can grant wishes.
Yeah. Contact with the star.
Right, because the star gave her a magic wand and now she's a fairy godmother. It's also just, so it's not even like the movie is saying it is bad to entrust your hopes and dreams to someone who promises that they can fix them for you versus you doing it for yourself. Because then at the end, the movie is like, well, you can still have someone who does that, but you should also try
I guess
a little bit.
I guess they just shouldn't be in charge of your life. And
right.
I guess the difference being Asha's not like hoarding them.
Right. And it feels like it would also be a very un-Disney thing to be like, don't wish.
Yeah. So
do
like,
it yourself.
As a thought experiment, let's say that like Sabino didn't give away his wish.
Yeah.
He's therefore capable of trying to do this on his own because he knows he wants to make a song and he might succeed or he might not succeed, but that's just something he can do.
Right.
Whereas like with the wit, like with the wish taken, it's just like, it's so weird to me that it just like, it has to work by virtue of not being allowed to remember that you wanted to
write
it. Right.
You just, it would be like, yeah, you just like have no, like you see an instrument and you're like, I don't care about this.
Yeah. Which is just bizarre.
Yeah,
bizarre.
I agree. Yeah.
And I think on the other side of, the question of why did the first people ever give their wishes up is why did Chris Pine want to take them in the first place? Because I understand they seem to imply it's like a control thing, but I feel like that's very poorly explained. And it's very weird that part of the way through the movie, he only realizes suddenly, oh, if I crush these wishes, I can consume their power and I become more powerful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so then why were you collecting them to begin with?
Arguably, I think they're trying to do with Chris Pine's character is they're trying to imply that at one point he was like a benevolent king who thought that the best way to like give people what they wanted was to just do it in this manner. Like, I think you must assume, I think, when watching this, that at one point Chris Pine had the best of intentions in doing this. And then
whatever those might have been.
Question mark. Things changed. Who knows what exactly. Then he read an evil book and became evil.
I think that like in the movie, again, he's very two-dimensional and not fleshed out well in the movie. His motivations. And you have to do a lot of guessing.
Right.
But from what I can see in the movie is that it seems like what happened is sort of a generic sort of power trip or like narcissistic spiral where like the longer he's been king and been the one doing this, the more he feels entitled to be the one that has.
Yeah. Or I was, it also like he feels paranoid at times too. Like
I think that goes kind of hand in hand with the narcissism, but like we had talked about, you know, that it's not a great, it still paints him as like a very caricature.
Yes.
Yeah. A
villain.
Two-dimensional sort of. Yeah. And not like fun two-dimensional.
It's
just
very,
sort of like questionable.
It's very shallow. It makes, I mean, it's, we see it with him, but I think virtually everything in this movie feels unmotivated, poorly connected to each other.
Yeah.
And it feels very rote, right? And it feels very skeletal. And I actually think there are hints of a cool shape of things here. I don't hate this idea of we all live in this city where we're all kind of depressed because the sorcerer captured our dreams.
They don't read as depressed.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing too,
oh,
right? No, you're not wrong, but I'm saying like, because the weird thing is they're like, oh, Simon seems so depressed and bummed out all the time
since
he gave his wish.
The only one.
But right, like, do other people feel this way? It doesn't seem like they do. The other people seem like they're functioning normally. So like, why is he weird about it?
I think it's a cool idea. It's just they don't.
You get introduced to the world. Sorry.
They just don't connect enough to make it work.
Yeah, I agree.
You get introduced to the world in the beginning and it's like, oh, it's a nice, normal, happy
family. Everyone's very happy here.
And then we go into town and we sing songs. And, the wish ceremonies and everyone's like normal.
Yeah.
And go, making cookies to celebrate thing. And it all seems very normal. So it's like, where does the depression go from losing your wish after a while? Does it just fade back? Because people seem like they're going about their lives generally pretty happy.
Right.
So it kind of in that way does make sense. If people are like this, it's clearly been working for them somehow.
Right.
Clearly it's not ideal and they don't know what they're missing out on because they've had it taken away from them.
One wrench that I think is almost slightly thrown into it, but they don't spend a lot of time with it is in that one like wish ceremony that we see. I'm pretty sure that first couple is like newcomers to the kingdom.
They do, and they do like, look a little. Yeah.
Offer up your wish,
right? And they and do like, look a little weird. I think, like, I guess in the movie is trying to imply that like maybe this is a temporary side effect because like once they give them up, they like they don't look like depressed or sad, but they look sort of apprehensive.
They
yeah,
kind of look like yeah, like. You know, disoriented.
But it could just be
and
like,
that's
right.
When the guy says, forget without regret.
Yeah, yes! Which is, so if you were in a mob and someone shouts that out, like, you start to go the other direction. Like, get out of this town, man.
Well, and I just, it just makes me think, like, do you never compare how you felt outside of Rosas to how you felt after you arrived?
Right.
Also, like,
again, I think that this memory magic is way more complicated than, like, oh, I just take the wish.
Yeah.
Literally, it's removing people's ability to, like, it's removing the whole drive in the first place,
right.
Which is more than just one. You know, it's not like one time you thought you wanted to write a song and you just removed that one little memory.
Right.
It's like,
this was
you
like
have to make sure it never happens
right,
again.
Right. Do other people know what your wish was? Like, don't you think that, like, Asha's mom would,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Someone, like, even if your
exactly.
best friend gave up their wish,
yeah.
And they, like, is it, can you only wish something that you've never communicated before?
Right.
But, like, how would you do that?
Like, you
right.
talk about with people who, like a thing and then they'll come back at you with, like, well, it's just, you're picking it apart too much. It's just
yeah.
a movie. And it's like, well, these are valid questions.
Yeah, no, like, these are questions that every citizen of this town should be asking at any given
yeah.
point. And, like, we simply don't get any of this.
I also just wanted to point out that I know they vaguely get into this for the briefest of seconds when, like, towards the end and all the people are, like, pestering him with questions that are getting
yeah.
more and more fed up. And someone says at one point, what if I have a new wish?
Right.
Wishes change. And I was like, yeah, that's right. But
that's
also,
okay.
don't you have multiple wishes?
Right. I mean,
are we all only
exactly.
defined by one single wish, which means we only have this one thing we're meant to do? That's
yeah.
right. And
you
also,
imagine
but,
if you were like, when I was like young, I wanted to be a fighter pilot. Could you imagine? It's like, like I get my wish granted, and it's like, I want to be a psychologist now.
Yeah.
But now I have to be a
fighter pilot. Right. Yes. And also just like, so, and how can you also compare, like, if you have another wish, how can you compare that to your original wish if you don't know what your original wish was?
Exactly.
How do you know that you want this one more when you don't know what the first wish was in the first place?
Yeah.
What if you're like, I'm pretty sure my wish has changed. I can't know that for certain because I don't remember what
right.
it was, but I'm pretty sure I have a new wish.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, like, wait, you give it up and the other one just, like, shatters or something.
Yeah, it goes
like,
back to you. Then it doesn't go back to you. Like, oh, boy, that was a better wish, actually.
Yeah.
I should have stuck with the first
yeah,
one.
I feel like we've eviscerated this world building.
Yeah, and I mean, I think also kind of just tying to that, like, I have a hard time figuring out sort of, like, what the overall, like, theme or moral is of this movie. Like, it was one of the, like, Chris, you had said when we were talking about this that, like, the thing that kept getting kicked around was they're like, it's the origin story of the Wishing Star.
Right.
I don't think it is, because, like, the Wishing Star thing is kind of a little incidental to the larger mechanics in the story. And also, whenever Asha says, I wished on a star, the little dummy says something like, what are you, five? So it's like, you know that wishing on stars is a thing in your universe. You just don't expect a star to pop down out of the sky and give it to you.
Maybe, but I think I would actually counter-argue it is still the backstory of the Wishing Star.
I guess,
because,
but, like, what does the star
get
you?
Well, because they are treating this as if this is the first time a star has ever granted wishes.
I guess
so. Which means that from this point forward, everyone who's wishing on a star will eventually see it granted.
Yeah, but, it, I mean, this is, again, that, then that's just such a, like...
And the star is a character.
No, the star is a character.
And one that makes basically most of the story happen.
That's true, but then I think on the same note, it's sort of, why did the star grant her wish in the first... Like, why her? Why
know.
This person? Why now, star?
She's
right.
the main character in a Disney movie.
Right.
I mean, guess I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's all I got for you too.
The
but
star
it's...
was up there being like, "Hey, that was a nice of Chris Pine to deny that."
Yeah.
Or
I've had some problems in the past, but now he's gone too far.
If I had to look at it through a like Disney character logic lens,
yeah.
I'd probably say it's because she was so pure of heart that when she had the opportunity to
right.
advocate for a wish, she advocated
for the people, right?
For the people around her,
right? Not herself.
And I think if I really, and this is we're truly off the map because they don't tell you
right.
any of this, but if I had to guess, I would say it's because she is just the best person because she was the most selfless and
yeah.
the most like for the community.
And I think that's perfectly fine, but again, it's not in the movie.
Not in the
like
movie,
that makes
no.
that does make perfect sense.
That was me just doing some work for the movie,
right?
Like,
but none of this shit ever shows up in
no.
there.
They are effectively oppositional ideas, right? Chris Pine is about hoarding things for the singular aggrandizement and power of one person.
Right.
She's for the democratization of wishes and make sure everyone
has their own, yeah, has the right to pursue their own
time,
dreams.
The democratization of wishes consent to that.
It did come up.
It'll never be said ever.
No, this is a phrase that once this day is done, that phrase will never be said by anyone ever again.
If there's any voters of Rosas listening right now, the democratization of wishes...
Rise up against your king. Please. Yeah. Vote for the goat.
Rise up.
I think if I can just one last thing want to say about the world building, that I actually do appreciate. I appreciate that in what was otherwise a very whatever rote autopilot story, fantasy story, I was very glad that it wasn't like the most amazing thing you'll ever see, but it was not like they were like, I don't know, make it just look like random Western Europe medieval shit. It looks Mediterranean. There's sort of
we can kind of go into that in this, like the aesthetic, the animation thing, which we can sort of segue to just now, I guess, at this point. So the visuals of this movie, let's just start with sort of like what we kind of liked. Like you were saying there, like the aesthetics of it.
I love the way the Rosas looks. I like that we're peppering in other languages. Like there's quite a bit of Spanish. They have a lot of kind of Sephardic and just like Mediterranean looks to things.
Yeah.
There was a much more diverse skin shades than you typically get. I liked some of the costume designs. Magnifico is a really dumb name, but I liked his cape that was kind of pinned on.
Yes. It was really a dumb name. It is a dumb name.
Yeah, King Magnifico.
That gave me his real name.
I assume not, right? Like, I assume that was just a name he gave himself. Yeah, so just to sort of, like, dip into the animation aspect of this real quick. So I feel like this was something that sort of, when this trailer came out, there were a lot of people instantly being like, looks bad. Looks unrendered, looks unfinished. And, like, I get that. I'm not saying those people are wrong, per se. I'm just saying that this was kind of, like, an initial thing. And I was trying to figure out, as I was watching this movie, like, why does it look weird to me? Why does it look strange? Why would people look at this and think this looks cheap or not done correctly? I wasn't sure if it was the idea of, like, it was cel-shaded, which it kind of is. Mm-hmm. So, like, it looks vaguely like a better Wind Waker in some moments.
Yeah.
I don't outright hate the aesthetics of
what's
this.
What's different in Wish as opposed to, obviously, like, Breath of the Wild, there's concern, and Skyward Sword also kind of did this, too. There's, like, processing concerns.
Right.
It's being done live.
Right.
But in Wish, what the difference is it has these backgrounds that are like almost matte painting, like
very flat,
static and flat, but like beautifully detailed.
Yeah. They're beautifully detailed, but no depth.
Yeah,
right.
So not a lot of depth, but like it kind of works in a weird way.
Yeah. I would suspect the lack of depth is to make it again look more like a hand drawn movie. Even if you do your best to like make it look multidimensional, they are inherently flat.
But I thought you got some interesting looks when like there's the during the Wish song that I wish,
whatever
it's called. When she's going to that, like,
the tree. Yeah.
And there's, like, a bit where it has that sort of, you know, background, very 2D matte look painting. But then there's these, like, vines, and the vines, like, almost like one of those, I can't, like, paper puppety type thing where it's, like,
cutouts.
Yeah, yes. Cutouts. Because, the vines kind of have that style as well, where they're a bit more vibrant and they're moving.
Right.
They have to be. So it has this, like, stark contrast of depth as opposed to a more graphic.
Right.
Contrast.
It does feel like there's sort of, like, a multi-plane thing going in kind of in that respect. And, like, also, the one thing I noticed when I was watching it is, like, there's a shot in the beginning of Magnifico's castle where they show clouds, and the clouds look very much like hand-drawn clouds. They don't look like CGI designed to look like real clouds. They look like stylized rolling clouds. And I was this is great. Yeah, this looks nice. I like this.
Yeah. I think that there's ways that it looks cheap. I think that the design of the characters contributes to it looking cheap.
I agree.
The faces are kind of like empty spaces.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of depth to them.
Right. I think Asha looks kind of like Moana, who looks kind of like Rapunzel, who looks,
But like, if you watch the thing, like if you watch, like, what I was really noticing is when you watch like the dresses and the fabrics move, like that's when you can really see like the, wow, money went into this animation.
Because
it looks drawn.
I think that the animation itself, like the actual work of the animators to bring this to life is done very well. Like there is a lot of talent clearly here as far as that's concerned. And I think like if people have issues with it, it lies in the aesthetics of how it was created versus the
process,
technical.
I also, you had mentioned before that maybe one of the issues around it was lighting.
Yeah, so here's just real quick. There was a YouTube video I watched. There's a YouTuber called Know the Robot, who's an animator who's like worked for DreamWorks before. He has a video called Why Wish Looks Bad, where he tried to break down why people would look at this and be like, looks bad, looks cheap. And so part of the reason that he thinks is that it was done without motion blur, which is something that a lot of CGI movies do, CG animated movies will do. They will do motion blur because it lends realism to the movie. So if a character is moving quickly, it will add like a blur effect similar to what you would see in live action. So you look at this and you think realism. Now, because most CGI uses this as a concept, like most big budget CGI animated movies will use this, if a movie chooses not to use this, it looks more like TV animation, which by and large does not have the budget to do things like motion blur. So his first thought was that because they have turned motion blur off in an attempt to make it look like 2D animation, which by and large does not have motion blur because, like, it simply can't, unless you want to, like, stylize, like, someone, like, blurring as they're running or something. Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of it right there, which I think is probably pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. The other thing that he had said was because the movie has a painterly watercolor sort of feel to the background, they made a choice to sort of light it in a kind of flat, even manner, which again is something more in 2D animation, where you're not, like, with CG animation, there's a lot more of, like, where is the light coming from? Because it's very easy. I mean, not easy, but, like, it's easier than it's in hand-drawn animation to be like, light is coming from here, have the light hit them like this, versus the hand-drawn animation where you have to, like, think
it's just like ahead of the time. It's
right.
CGI.
Right, yeah. Whereas in hand-drawn, it's like you have to think ahead of the time, where is the light coming from? So, like, by and large, 2D tends to be lit sort of a little more flat and evenly because you don't really have, like, the time or budget to do that. And because this, again, is mimicking the aesthetics of that, everything is lit fairly evenly. So it also kind of makes it look like TV animation in that respect, where you're not focusing too much on, like, where is light coming from? How is the light hitting you? Because that's kind of the look that you're going for. And it's sort of one of those things where the desire to make it look more hand-drawn inadvertently makes people look at it and think, oh, this is cheap.
I think it would have looked... I think lighting could have actually solved a lot of our... or at least addressed a lot of our complaints, because when you were talking about how it looked kind of papery, I agree. One of the things that popped into my mind when I was watching this, and I wondered...
I like papery effect, though.
I do as well. Yeah. And I think a movie that does that very successfully is Kubo and the Two Strings. Mm-hmm. But that is something that employs a lot of moody lighting to take what could have otherwise been very flat looking and make it look very dramatic and dynamic.
Well, that's true. And Kubo also has the advantage of being stop motion animation. So you have physical lights.
I thought it was just mimicking stop motion.
No, Kubo is stop motion. So Kubo has actual lights on set that you could, you know.
I'm having like a tip of my tongue moment, but like, are there movies that... I feel like there is one that we're obviously forgetting, but are there movies in the past that have been 3D trying to emulate 2D that have, you think have done this better?
Klaus.
That's what I was thinking.
Was it going to be Klaus? I would also say a lot of the Spider-Verse movies have done that well. Spider-Verse, the thing that Spider-Verse does very interesting is a variety of animation styles in one movie, too, like, also lends a real sort of interesting look to it. So a lot of the times, you know, like, Miles Morales' universe is kind of, like, flatter versus, who's the one that Oscar Isaac plays in the new one? But you know what I mean? Like, Future Spider-Man, or whatever, Spider-Man 2099. Animation is predominantly done on twos, is what they call it, where it's 24 frames per second is a film, right? So animation holds a frame for two frames, and then, like, the character moves. And this is done because to do one frame per second, usually one is more time-consuming and expensive, and also it looks off to us now because we're so used to it, versus, like, anime, which is animated on threes, where it tends to be, like, three still images, then the character moves, which is why, like, you can look at anime and be like, well, it looks, like, jerkier or something like that. And it's by and large because something like that. So the way Spider-Man did it, apparently, is, like, Miguel is animated on ones, Miles is animated on twos, and I want to say Spider-Punk is, like, animated on threes. So he looks like he's, like, all these characters are moving, like, differently from each other, which I think is, like, wildly fascinating.
Yeah,
so, like, that's also probably why something like Spider-Man reads as, like, a better version of a flat style of animation. But even Disney did a short called Paper Man. Do you remember that at all?
That one I don't remember.
Okay, but it was an early attempt to try and make 3D animation look like 2D animation, and it achieved that pretty well, I think. And also, I wonder if it's just the fact that, like, it's more stylized in a simplistic sense, and maybe like, The Undoing was trying to make this look as visually lush as possible. On the one hand, I respect that Disney tried to do something different with it, but on the other hand, it's like, this does run the risk of people looking at it and being like, no, cheap, bad, go away, get rid of it. So that's the problem you have. And so by and large, I don't think this movie looks terrible, but I understand why people will look at it and be like, looks cheap, doesn't look great. So I get that. Let's break down characters before we move away from this. So we got Asha for the first point, obviously. Asha. Boy. Yes.
She's a very blah-written character. I believe this is, to sum up a brief exchange we had, we're like, man, Ariana DeBose can't catch a
break.
Frickin' break, guys.
I just, like, can't... If she, like, I don't know. She's so... like, nice, and I did she needs something spice.
I agree, yes, there's it's a little just too bland. Well, she's like blandishly pleasant.
There's no spunk to her, and it's not necessarily surprising she rises up against Chris Pine, but it's just sort of like, I don't know, it's the most bland version of that story.
Right.
And again, what does she want?
I mean, that's the bigger issue that I have here. It's given that this is a kingdom all about, like, what is your wish? Think about your wish. Like, what is Asha's wish prior to all this? Like, it feels like that should kind of inform her character a little bit. Like, does she wish to be his apprentice, and that's what she would have wished for in the first place?
Yeah, it's kind of wild because, like, isn't she on the cusp of this?
Right. Ceremony? She's 17. She'll be 18 in a year. So you think, like, at this point, it's like, you know, choosing your major in college. It's like, you got to, like, double down and start thinking.
How is this, like, not part of the story in this movie?
Yeah, no, again, the very, very weird that, like, there are so many under 18 characters in this movie who don't seem to be sitting there thinking, like, but what will you wish for when you hit 18? Like, this is a huge aspect of her society.
Her whole Seven Dwarves fucking crew should have, like, a song where they all talk about
their, like, what they think they're gonna wish. Yeah.
But instead they have a song about how we're all stars.
They're not in that one, but unfortunately, this is what we waste our song for. Yeah. Well, they don't sing the reprise, though. They sing the reprise of Asha's I Want song. That's the reprise.
I thought they were singing the reprise of We're All Stars. No?
No. There is no reprise of We're All Stars. The other thing that came up just briefly when I was watching that YouTube video to figure out what the deal is with the animation, the guy also mentioned, which I think is kind of an interesting point, that the movie is focusing on the wrong emotional beats, where the movie seems more like you should be focused on the idea that you're excited that this company has been around for 100 years versus anything about Asha's emotional journey in the movie, which is why, like, Asha doesn't really have an emotional journey. You like, think that, like, so many characters in movies, it's either like you, in the beginning of the movie, you want X, and then throughout the movie, you realize that actually you wanted Y instead. Mm-hmm. Like, you, a wish is kind of like a surface level thing. And this is, again, a Princess and the Frog thing where Tiana's like, I wish I had a restaurant. And Mamoni's like, no, you really don't. Like, you wish that you, like, made friends with people and were like, you know, had a community for yourself. And she's like, oh, I get it now. You want something that seems like what on a surface level is something you desire, but then find out that there's actually something deeper at play there. Mm-hmm. Or you get what you wanted all along, but, like, something happens and changes you, so you lose part of yourself along the way or something, and, like, neither of these things really happen to Asha. You have a new dream, like, Entangled.
But it's all just, it's wishes all the way down,
right? It's just wishes turtles all the way down.
You know that I Think You Should Leave thing where that it's that country song that just gets way off the tracks, and
what,
just
skulls and the bones,
the bones are their money and the wishes are their money.
Yes, it is much like the wishes are their money. Wishes are their money.
Likes wishes. They use wishes to pay their things.
Would have been a better song.
They pull hair up but not out.
So we touched on him briefly then, but I guess Magnifico would be the next
person
to cover here.
He's
so
just, again, I've kind of covered that. He's such a caricature, but it's like it's within, like, what, 5 minutes of meeting him, he has, like, a sort of weird freak-out moment.
Right.
Like, okay, that guy.
As soon as he's like, well, if we allow your father to play an inspiring song, that could rise the people up against
me. That could topple my regime.
Right.
And he says that to her straight up, and she doesn't have the reaction that maybe she should, which
is
like,
banana? Yeah,
right.
Like, that's
yeah. I'm sorry, sir. Are you insane, actually?
And she's just like, oh, shucks. I guess the king won't make it.
No, I mean, she's kind of like, I don't think he would. But, like, she doesn't, so, like, again, this is like, he's waving a red flag in her face, being like, all wishes are inherently bad. And she's
sounds like something a tyrant would say.
Yeah, right. And she's just sort of like, okay, sus.
Yeah.
So there's also the thing about his backstory, which is kind of tossed out and never really fully integrated in a way that matters, where he mentions that, like, when he was younger, his land was destroyed by greedy thieves, which is, like, his exact vague words, greedy thieves. And, like, I guess that also killed his parents or something like that, too. He wanted to make a place where people were safe. And then it sort of becomes, like, to make people safe, I have to take their wishes, which is not something the movie explicitly spells out, but I guess, like, you're supposed to infer it or something.
It's a real problem because it ends up undermining the rest of the movie.
Speaking also kind of on the idea when he's like, what if your grandfather's banger launches an uprising? Like, I kind of, like I said, I kind of like that as a character aspect to show that he's already gone round the bend from the get-go. But on the one hand, if this is the case, every wish could be inherently read as something evil. What's to stop the woman who wants to make nice dresses from making uniforms, right? Or it's also, like, clearly you should be, like, a good enough wizard to either completely defang every wish they come up with or just not grant them at all. And, like, maybe this is maybe you used to grant them and your mind's starting to slip a little bit and you're kind of like, no, actually,
also,
I can't grant them anymore.
He later says that magic is, like, somebody says that magic is banned except for him, which is, like, number one with a bullet.
Yeah.
Weird.
You might be ruled by a tyrant.
Right. No, if your first law is like only I may do magic, you might want to look into this a little bit more.
And also you might be a redneck.
You might be a redneck.
You might be a redneck. If your land says you can't use magic for your own purposes, you might be ruled by a tyrant.
That is what I was going for. Thank you for catching that.
It's also kind of weird to me that this character is kind of at various points like a comic character, but also like kind of, like, I think a villain can be kind of funny, which is like definitely a thing that's happened before, yeah. But it almost feels like he makes like a sudden 180 transformation from slightly kind of like ridiculous, to like self-absorbed, right, to like full-blown lunatic, and it's because the book made him evil, which I fucking hate. Like,
so like your wife is scared of you.
Right, yes. All the blame can be placed on the book. Not on you. When the queen is going through the book and she's like, oh no, it says that if you start to use magic from the evil book, you're gone, kiddo. Like, you are evil forever. It feels kind of like it's there so that you feel okay that he gets trapped in a mirror in the end and doesn't get redeemed, which getting trapped in a mirror is dumb because it doesn't feel like an ironic punishment, because like every now and then they're like, oh, the king is a hunk, but only a few times is he's like, mirrors are a thing.
But it's just an evil queen from Snow White reference at the end of the day.
Right.
I want to just sort of take a second to separate fact from fiction with, like, we talked about how we don't really, it's foggy how this kingdom got started and what the process was.
Yeah.
So, like, what fact from, like, extrapolation, because we made a lot. This thing happened. His dream was crushed by the greedy thieves that to kill his parents or whatever.
His wish was crushed, excuse me.
He makes a wish, whatever the fuck you're calling it. He decides to go found a kingdom to keep everyone, quote-unquote, safe.
Yeah.
And at that point, we don't know why, but he does start collecting people's wishes and keeping them safe so that they can be granted at a later time by him. That's just a fact.
Right.
And he does do this. Like, he is granting, like, at least one wish per month.
Pretty much a month, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just, like, on his purview.
Right.
Which wish gets granted. And then the first sign of trouble is when Asha is like, well, what about my grandfather's wish? And he's like, can't be that one because it's too dangerous.
Too vague, yeah.
Which, like, again, it's a huge red flag. But, like, it's been running smoothly for so long that you have to wonder. Again, it does leave room for wonder. We don't know the answers. I feel like we should be told something. Yeah. We should learn it. But, like, did this go wrong at some point for him, or was it weird from the start? It doesn't seem like it was weird from the start.
Right.
It seems like somewhere along the way he got weird.
And right. And everything was running smoothly until X, but what is X?
If he was corrupted, honestly, by just, like, having that kind of power or, you know, whatever, it feels weird that then he's only really a villain after he reads an evil book. So it's like, so then what's the message?
Well, I think he's clearly weird before then, right?
Right.
It seems like he feels threatened by...
I mean, the book almost feels like such a weird-ass afterthought. You know, it's like he doesn't need to read an evil book that makes you evil forever. He could just have that transition on his own. Like, why do we have the book here to absolve him, like, his blame?
He was already going down that path.
Right, so, like, the book thing is just bizarre to me that it felt the need to include that. And, like, that doesn't even feel like a reference to
a thing.
Like, I just don't know what's there.
That's a one-line thing, too, right? Where they, like, look in the book and they're like, oh, yeah, if you read it, you're fucked.
Right, yeah. It's, like, such a throwaway thing. Right, it turns out that, like, once you read from the evil book, you become evil forever. There's no saving you, sorry. Which is, like did he not know that? Like,
yeah.
It's just, I don't know, and like this fucking, like, where's the book come from? What's the book?
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many fucking questions.
Did they
like,
even give it a name? Aside
no, it's
from
just, I think it's just
book?
Like the
These,
book.
These like binary yes, no conditions in stories are so stupid all the time where it's like, well, it just makes you evil.
Right, yeah, like, look, move on, accept it.
Why?
Book makes
it
you
just
evil.
Does. It just
Why?
Does.
Yes, because plot demands it. I don't think I have anything else I wanted to really throw out about him because I'm pretty sure I covered all of his shit.
We got him.
So, Star. Star is, I guess, arguably
what
the third most
can
important
you say
character.
About Star?
It's a Star.
It's Grogu, it's BB-8.
It's Grogu, it's BB-8, it's R2, it's the, what's the fucking star from Mario?
Loon something.
Right.
L-U something.
Those things. Loon. It reminds me of that. So here's something fun that when I was looking for information about this movie online, originally the character of Star was written as a shape-shifting character who predominantly took on the form of a young adult male for much of the story.
Okay.
It could still talk, and then at a certain point, they thought the shape-shifting was too similar to the genie, so it became a character designed to sell Funko Pops. And I can't tell you how much more I love the idea of Mute Starboy as a character versus this little blob with a face on it. I'm just already kind of more invested in like this Stardust style story where the star comes to Earth and the star just chooses to take on a human form because like that's how it can relate to this human. And again, it doesn't need to talk. You don't need to have it constantly shapeshifting. You can shapeshift once because that's just like the form that it thinks is most relevant for this. I cannot begin to tell you how much I am more invested in this story already just seeing images of that drawn online and was like, boy, this is better already.
It's like a little animated glowing piece of shit.
Right.
Yeah.
It looks like nothing.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's a circle. It's a little sphere with
it's
a little
like
face on it.
Big fat circle with these tiny little triangles coming out that act as hands or whatever or limbs.
Right. It just feels like nothing I haven't seen elsewhere.
And in terms of like personality. Mm-hmm. It just goes around whimsically granting quote-unquote wishes or magic, which mostly seems to amount to making animals and plants talk.
Right, it's like, are those wishes, or is this just, like, the thing you do? You know, like, yeah. Is this just what you can do?
And was having, making magic happen.
Was having talking plants and animals just another kind of Disney thing? Because they love their talking animals. Talking plants are, like, a big Wonderland thing.
Yeah. It's reeks of, like, we didn't put a lot of thought into this.
Right,
just,
right.
Just kids like when mushrooms talk.
Right, it's funny when they talk.
The wish of all plants and animals is speech.
Yeah.
It's human
chickens,
speech.
Chickens want to form, like, a dance troupe.
A complicated, complicated choreographic
or
team.
Or be so humongous that they lay a giant egg.
Yes. Yeah.
The two things a chicken wants. Be big or dance.
It's really uncomfortable when they, like, sort of cannon fire eggs.
Yeah, it's gross.
That's gotta hurt. That's about all I got for Stara, I guess. Just real quickly, I want to throw out also the idea that Amaya, the queen, was also apparently written as evil in early versions of the story as well. They were both supposed to be an evil couple. And if you look online, there's a lot of people on Tumblr and such who think that they should have kept them as an evil fucking power couple. And I get it. We all want to see evil people fuck. From a plot perspective, unless it matters that there are two evil people, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So that's my quick sort of counterpoint to that. Unless you need to have two evil people, you know, because one of them, like, changes their mind halfway through or some shit like that. Or maybe if Amaya was, like, pretending to be good and then turns out to secretly be a villain at the end, then it matters. If it's just two evil, horny people being, like, one unified evil person, it doesn't matter from a plot point of view. I'm sorry, but it doesn't.
Yeah, but it's fine. Let people make their fan fiction and fan art.
It is fun. I don't care what they want to do. I've seen some people online be like, if they were still, like, an evil couple, this movie would have been so much better.
Yeah,
like, I really wouldn't have.
I understand where it's coming from in the sense that, like, it makes the queen feel like she has more agency
right.
if she's choosing this life versus if she's getting, like, I mean, it's like you're almost watching, like, it almost rings of, like, early domestic abuse.
Yes, no, 100%. Like, this woman realizes that she's married to a monster.
Yeah.
And then thinks it's very funny when he's trapped in a mirror and just is like, oh, haha.
Yeah.
You're going to be in the dungeon forever, mirror husband. Like, you've mirror slept husband. Next to this man for, like, 20-some years,
yeah.
honey. Like, feel a little bit of conflict here. It's
little
okay.
Little horror story.
Goat wife. Sabino is old, wants to write a banger. Asha's gang of idiots, I hate them all. And there shouldn't have been seven of them, and they shouldn't have corresponded worse.
I had to read off all their names.
Yeah,
I any
it's stupid.
Of them.
There should be, like, three tops.
Yeah,
they're
also, can we just briefly talk about names? There's, like, three S names. There's
Sabino.
Kina. Oh, okay, I thought you meant the specific.
There's Asha and Amaya.
Yeah.
I got confused.
No, there are. There is a lot of, I think, a lot of S's, and I think there was a couple of, like, I don't remember, like, B's or something. Maybe there are two. I don't remember. But yeah, there are a lot of similar-sounding names in this.
Use different letters.
Yeah.
It helps.
Yeah. And again, not seven. Very, very briefly, I want to kick around the music for this. The music is bad, and I don't like it.
Kick it.
I'm going to kick it fucking out of here, because I think the songs are, by and large, not good. Lee, do you have the Wikipedia open?
I did, yeah.
Do you know who the songwriters are? It's like Julia... I want to say it's like Julia Michaels and Benjamin Rice, I want to say, who are both known as... pop songwriters.
What the fuck is that? Music by, Julia and Benjamin.
There is oftentimes an issue when people who sort of are better at pop songwriting try and do more conventional musical theater style songs, and that they don't work. They sound usually more just like pop songs incorporated into a movie. Not something that all songwriters can't do, but something I think that is a challenge for people who are more like into a pop idiom. Mm-hmm. And that is my biggest problem with this. I think a lot of lyrics are kind of banal. I think the songs don't really say a whole lot, because a lot of pop songwriting is more focused on, like, evoking imagery or words that sound like, you know, things that sound a certain way but don't actually need to, like, sort of say anything. I had said with the Asha I Want song, I throw caution to every warning sign, which is a phrase that makes no sense at all. What does that mean? What does it mean, you throw caution to every warning sign? Does that mean you pay attention to warning signs? Does that mean you... get rid of your caution.
Take all my caution.
And throw it in the direction of a warning sign.
That does sound like what it means, but it should be the opposite in the song.
Right, because, like, she's saying that, like, I'm going to do what I want to do. So, like, throwing caution to a warning sign makes that sound like she's saying, I'm going to be very careful now.
Exactly.
But, like, no, that's not what you're doing, because you just made up a phrase that makes no sense.
Yeah, I guess she's replacing the concept of wind with a warning sign.
But, like, why?
I don't know.
And there's also there's a lot of, like, not great rhymes in this. A lot of, like, very... near rhymes, which I don't care for. King Magnifico's song, which Lee, you weren't in the room for most of, I hate so much.
It's really
bad. It's such like a sub, like, write a Lin-Manuel Miranda-esque song.
But there's so much negative There's so much like dead air in the song.
Yeah,
like, it's, I kind of didn't like the song structure of a lot of them.
Yeah, that too. I feel like a lot of them kind of oddly end. Like it feels like there's not a build in a certain point. They just sort of stop because you've hit 3 minutes and you're kind of like, eh,
it's time, like, gotta get out of here. The first verse of the Wish song was like this kind of more traditional song that just like speeds up and it's like not quite hip hop or rap, but it like kind of gets halfway there.
Yeah,
I'm like, why is the second verse double time?
Yeah.
And it just felt weird. Yeah, it was like we're cringe.
Right, I mean, it just kind of feels like they were like, this needs to build, so how can it build?
Yeah.
Speed it up.
Yeah, and I didn't like that.
I hate that We Are Stars song so much.
I hate everything about that. It looks bad.
It looks bad, right.
It makes it doesn't do anything.
No, I kind of, again, like I said, I kind of like the idea, and I think the movie is trying to say this, the idea that, like, you wish on stars because we and stars are made of star stuff. By wishing on a star, you are, in effect, right, like wishing that you could do the thing yourself. I kind of like that, but I feel like the movie never really fully commits to that as a concept anyway.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of bizarrely, I don't want to say like highbrow, but for lack of a better word, highbrow for this sort of movie, you know, like it's a weirdly sort of scientific concept to throw into your movie about magic wish kings. Yeah, this is the thanks I get is terrible. I think a villain song can be funny, but I think there's like a certain difference between a villain acting like kind of a vainglorious doof versus just like being like Mother Knows Best from Tangled is a funny song because it starts off as a list song with the villain being like, all these bad things will happen to you. And it just sort of sounds like an overprotective mother song. And then at the end, she's like, hey, don't you fucking leave this tower ever again. And then you like reprise it again and you get to be more evil in the reprise. But here it's just sort of like he's kind of a doof the entire song. And it's just kind of like it's funny, but it's not really showing menace or building to anything. So yeah, these songs are a miss. Fuck that shit. All right. So having covered everything about Wish, putting so much thought into Wish, we got to go into fixes. Anybody got anything?
I can start us.
Start
off. Okay. So it's interesting to try to fix something that's so thin, right? Because you're basically having to take its very flimsy outline and build something off of it. So what I was thinking about was, there was that moment towards the end where he briefly covers the sky in clouds so people can't wish against stars. I kind of want to start there. So I went down a bit of a rabbit hole in myself. I'm just like, why the fuck is he called Magnifico? It's so weird that it's Asha, Sabino.
Right.
They sound roughly within the same fantasy family.
Right.
And then you get to Magnifico and you're like,
Yeah.
So I'm deciding he is sort of like a Wizard of Oz type figure in that that was the sort of like hack magician name. So one time he picked up an evil book, let loose a like an evil dream-eating creature that he has to feed, but who in return has like given him dominion over this kingdom of Rosas. I think it fills in at least a reason for why he is collecting people's wishes beyond just the suggestion that that somehow gives him amount of control. And I think the story that he tells about, like, oh, my dreams got crushed by, like, greedy thieves or whatever, it's a pretty thin story. I think in-universe that should just be the really, like, lame cover that he uses. I think harvesting a wish from someone, I think in this case it's going to be more clearly defined as being you're taking away all of their desires and goals, so they are just sort of listless and directionless, so they can't rise up against you. The whole kingdom is noticeably sort of depressed and, you know, whatever, because he's routinely feeding their wishes to this, like, giant dream monster. Mm-hmm. Asha is somehow contacted by a star who has managed to, like, pierce through the cloud cover. It's not necessarily about democratizing wishes.
Oh, that word.
It's about kind of, like, freeing these people from this lid that both Magnifico and the demon have sort of, or whatever the creature is, has sort of, like, put over them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, wishes are still present within the story as an important thing, but they're not... They're not the thing itself. It's sort of about them reclaiming who they are as people, finding the actual way they want to go, because they weren't able to realize that under Magnifico.
I like that. I think that's a pretty clever workaround, frankly.
I tried. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I don't have a lot.
Go for it.
I don't like Magnifico as a 2D villain, so I wanted to flesh this guy out a bit more, so... I kind of ran with the idea that something, whatever the fuck happened to him when he was a kid, you know, whether it was like, I don't know what his dream was, but it was something related to maybe like, maybe he was a prince of a former kingdom and that kingdom got ruined by some sort of coup or whatever. I don't even know, they don't even really establish like, was Amaya involved or did he meet her afterwards?
Yeah, Amaya doesn't really have a backstory.
I think it really only... I think this would kind of make more sense if Amaya was witness to this or was with him during all... when all of this went down, because that she would understand a lot more, like, where he's coming from. It's maybe that, like, he was the prince of some other kingdom and some horrible disaster happened to that kingdom and... it wasn't just, like, greedy thieves. And that really, like, kind of fucked him up psychologically. And he decides to, like, take the remnants of whoever his people were and find this new island to settle. And it's, like, so this is, like, an isolated kingdom with, like, what you're dealing with is probably, like, old men and younger people. Where it's, like, the people were... the rest of them are dead.
Yeah.
And so you have a relatively good starting point where everyone's, like, tabula rasa, fresh start... and need to come over and to like breathe. And so he probably then founds this kingdom with this idea of, I need to like make sure that what happened to me doesn't happen to anyone ever again. So I will make sure that nobody feels the like crushing disappointment that I felt by like removing their ability to have these strong wishes and these desires in the first place. And so creates this kingdom where like everyone, so it's like, it's not, and it's not like a depressing kingdom. It's just like, it's kind of like, people on meds to, you know what I mean? It's like a yeah. level kingdom
yeah.
where it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
there's mellow. No highs, yeah. there's no right. lows. It's just like, everyone is just like...
Chill.
yeah. Once it's sort of like initially set up, it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't take that long. I do think that he probably has to be like either quite older or somehow have extended his lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this makes sense that this has only been going on 20 years.
No, that's insane.
Yeah. Or that this is the king in the story is like the son or something
mm-hmm.
and was trained by his father. And this is like the only thing. And it's like a generational trauma thing where it's like, no, you have to do this
right.
because I don't care which it is. But I think it just only makes sense that this comes from a place of like, this is genuinely what I think my people need, and this is how I'm going to keep my kingdom safe and happy, is by making sure that they don't feel the horrible disappointment and crushing, like, you know, the thing that I felt. I think you establish in-world, I said in-game, like, as if I'm doing a D&D, I am doing a D&D campaign soon. Like, you have to kind of establish, like, kind of make this feel more real by having, like, well, there are probably, like, stories people tell or, like, things people say about, like, yeah, don't worry, when you do the ritual, you'll feel bad for a few days. Mm-hmm. That's normal. It happens. But it'll pass, and it'll be fine. And
yeah.
this is, like, it all works out great. And, like, they really pump up. There's, like, so much, like, good press that gets pumped. Like, whoever gets their wishes granted gets, like, a feature in the newspaper
yeah.
or the town crier, whatever the situation you have. Just so that everyone knows that, like, it's like the lottery, right?
Right. This,
like,
is a great thing, actually.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And, like... we can explain away all the bad things you might feel afterwards, and don't worry, you know, make sure your wish is set in mind, and we explain all the questions, the answers to a lot of the questions we have, about, like, why are people just accepting this? I don't think anything bad happens until Asha, I think, again, like, Asha, rather than kind of blowing it with the interview by being like, oh, can I get my grandfather's wish? I think it's, like, super weird to, like, first of all, even if you believe, like, even if the king wasn't evil, that's a super presumptuous thing to ask
yeah.
in your interview.
Right.
Like, I know that it's, like, a randomized thing, but now that I'm interviewing for this, like,
yeah,
job,
could
I
use my clout to,
can,
like...
I get a benefit
yeah.
instantly? It's, like...
I do kind of love that he is, like, well, people usually wait longer
yeah.
before asking for shit. I'm like, yeah, they probably should.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like it's... the threat doesn't happen for that, but it happens for, like... maybe she just doesn't get the job for a normal reason.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's her wish and he
yeah.
can't give it to her. Like, she doesn't know her wish yet, but
right.
she's able to detect, like...
what her wish would be. Yeah.
I know that your wish is this, so I'm sorry I can't give you the job. And then she wishes on the star and the star comes down. And that's when he realizes that this is a threat and then he has to stop her. And I think that the end is more of a cathartic, like... there is, like, a fight. There's no evil book that makes you evil forever. I think there is, like, a showdown between them where he does rally the kingdom... against her because he does see it as a threat, and he does lie to his people about why she's a threat, but it's, again, he's like, this is for everyone's good.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of ends with him having a turnaround, like a moral turnaround, and I think the price that he pays is that he has to give up all of his magic back to the star, or like maybe to the people, so that maybe, like, he's locked down magic for
mm-hmm.
the whole... maybe it's not that you can't...
democratization of magic.
The democratization of magic.
It's
maybe
important.
It's not that you're not allowed to do magic, but maybe he's just, like, prevented people from being able to do magic.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like the idea that he has to, like, give up what made him powerful in the first place and abdicate, and then everyone else gets their wishes back and can do what he used to do,
mm-hmm.
You know, unto themselves. And the magic can even be metaphorized as, like, you know, it's your willpower to get to accomplish your dream.
Right.
Because, like, he's just making it happen
right.
willy-nilly with, like, a woof,
right,
wave
right,
my
right.
wand and you get it. Whereas, like, when it's him giving it back, it's just sort of giving people back their own agency.
Like, right, yeah, the incentive to, like, follow their
own. Yeah, so that's what I would do.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So, as is kind of my want, I have, like, I have one, like, very half-baked idea just as a concept, and then I have more of, like, a general fix idea. So my vague abstraction is if you were to, like, look at this, like, strip it down to the studs and do, like, a ground-up rewrite from it, I don't think it should be about wishing, because I talked about this a little before, but I think it's, like, a fundamental misunderstanding of how fairy tales kind of work. Like, the wish is like not the thing that makes it interesting, which mm-hmm. we had talked about earlier. So there's kind of like a reason why the, like I said, like the I Want song is only 3 minutes long, and then we move on to like the character somehow learning to get what they want. We don't focus 90 minutes on like I want, I want, I want. And also, like I had said previously, there are so many Disney movies about how like wishing is not an inherently good thing, like Aladdin and Princess and the Frog, where it's like if you like you can wish for things, but it causes complications in you as well. So it's like to say that like wishes are sort of a neutral good in this universe is to me a fundamental misunderstanding of how these types of stories kind of work. So maybe it should be less about like Disney movies have people making wishes and should be more about like the deconstruction of storytelling in general. Like, why do people tell stories to each other? What is it about a story that appeals to someone? Why do we keep telling these stories? What relevance do they have to us? Something like that. Like, what is fundamentally the purpose of telling these stories generation after generation? And why do some of them like sort of stick in your craw and make you feel a certain way? So instead of being about like wishing, it should be more about like, what is the concept of storytelling? And like, what do we get from telling these stories and sharing these stories? Like that, I think, is a more acknowledgement of the past 100 years of like storytelling and movies and shit like that versus people like to make wishes in our movies.
It's way more accessible of an idea.
Yeah, and I think it like it's a more open ground and doesn't immediately start locking you into weird plot point questions that start to come up when you do a movie about people giving their wishes to an evil king. So anyway, you got that. The other thing I would say is there was a question I'd like pose to you guys when we were talking about this briefly, which is like, what is like the theme or moral of this movie? And I don't think we knew what it was. No. And I think that's fair. Yeah. I don't think any one of us.
It's so, I think the movie does.
No, I don't think they do either. So like, I guess if I were to say something like looking at this in through like the best possible lens, the theme is something about like being distrustful of charismatic leaders who promise to make everything better for you, which I think is like kind of what I think maybe is a reading of this movie. It's like a rudimentary warning about fascism in some respects in that way. You know, the perils of wholeheartedly entrusting everything about your core being to someone who's handsome and says the right things to you. Like that, I think, is something, right? Like that, I think, is something that this movie could be. So going off of that, I think the idea should be that this is sort of something that you had said also, Lee, the idea that sort of giving your wishes to this person renders you sort of more docile and it renders you sort of more controllable. And maybe you are just sort of like happy and mellow all the time. People, nonetheless, are still kind of into this for the most part, because like the idea of having someone just come along and grant their wishes for free is so appealing to them that they would be fine being sort of easily submissive and docile versus having to try and do this on their own, which like I think is an interesting thing to talk about, because like that's definitely true. Like people would rather sort of be chill and ignorant rather than try and like actually solve problems. True. I think so.
I think in like fascism too, there'd be an element of like, because he says he can't grant dangerous wishes, so it's like people are happy to do it under the it's like a fear-based thing where it's like, well, I'm happy because he's taking away the dangerous.
Right, right. Yes, it's a good thing that he's doing this. Yes. And like he's rendering these dangerous people like neutered in a sense, because now people can just wish for less and nice things, basically. So that's sort of like the world building that we have going on. As I said before, Star is a star boy in this one. I cannot tell star you how boy. Much more I like that.
He's a little starby.
He is. Aww. He can still be mute. Mute is fine if he doesn't talk. I think that's cool. It allows you to do some fun stuff with animation, but he doesn't need to shapeshift. He doesn't need to be a weird little star blob. He can just be like a glowing yellow boy. And I think that's fine. Doesn't need to be a romantic.
A glowing yellow boy.
What a beautiful glowing yellow boy.
He is my beautiful glowing yellow boy. Like, I don't think he needs to be a romantic interest. He can just be a friend. The idea at the end would maybe be that, like, while Magnifico is sort of going on his ultimate power trip at the end where things start collapsing because this magic star has shown up and has shown some sort of magical abilities to rival his own, Asha ends up using some kind of fairy logic bullshit to get Magnifico to wish for something evil, like he wants to dominate the kingdom for all eternity, because he wishes that, like he loses that aspect of him, and it like gets like sort of sucked out and the star disposes of it, and it renders Magnifico sort of neutered in that respect too, where he like mellows out and can't remember like that he was like an evil person in the first place. So he sort of like decides to like go off into the sunset and just sort of like help people out and be chill and cool, because he like has lost the aspect of his personality that made him evil, power hungry, and malicious. And so something like that, I think, could be sort of interesting. If you want to have, like, a redemption arc for Magnifico, it's probably something like that, where he decides to wander off and try to be good at the end.
It sort of sounds suspiciously like some sort of behavioral programming, though.
No, it does. Yeah. Admittedly, it does. That is, admittedly, the horrible like issue you have with any aspect of this where you try to incorporate the idea that people are giving up a part of themselves in some respect. Kind of a weird thing to delve into for a family movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, having gone into all of that crap, what do we think about Wish? Would you recommend it?
No.
No, I wouldn't either. It's short, it's very boring, which is the best I can say.
Easy no.
Yeah, it's short and it's kind of good looking, but watching it will just make you wish you were watching better things, basically.
Yeah, I would say, like, watch clips. Don't watch the trailer, like, actually, if you're interested in animation.
Yeah.
Watch it on mute or, like, watch different parts of it.
Right.
Watch it on mute.
Watch that YouTube video.
Yes.
You'll see, like, you know, probably see interesting things.
Yeah. There's some good work being done here, but...
Don't dismiss the animation entirely.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there are good things to be said about the animation. The issues for this mostly are, like, a story and character thing more than anything else. Okay. Also, bugs me a little bit that I don't know if you guys noticed during the end credits, they have references to other Disney movies and, like, the stars. Snow White and Pinocchio and, like, Mickey from Fantasia. They completely omitted Meet the Robinsons and the Black Cauldron, to which I say, fuck you! You include Ichabod from the Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad and omit the Black Cauldron and the Rescuers? No thank you. Not good. Don't approve. Anyways, so based solely off of that, I say the no.
No.
Especially at Meet the Robinsons. What an omission.
I love Meet the Robinsons. Anyways, having covered all of that, we will be back in 2 weeks with another mini episode where we'll talk about what our next movie will be. Our summer theming is coming around, so get ready for that shit. Mm-hmm. And until then, bye!
I'm a star! Woo! I'm a star!
Watch out, world, here I am!
Here you are.
You know who's looking sharp?
You're a star.